Good morning, and welcome to the February 7th, 2025 meeting of the of Michigan State University Board of Trustees. And I'm going to officially welcome for the first time to the board new trustee Rebecca Barhart Cook. Welcome. And trustee Mike Balow, welcome. So I'm going to officially call the meeting to order, and I'm going to turn to Secretary Stephen Fletcher.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the first Board of Trustees meeting of 2025. Today's agenda is filled with several significant action items of university business. There are also several speakers, including those who have come for public participation. Just as a sort of framework up front, in the event of a disruption that prevents the board from conducting business or the members of the public from hearing or observing the meeting will be recessed or adjourned. If the meeting is recessed, the board will meet via Zoom within 10 minutes of the recess occurring, and regrettably, there would not be an opportunity for public comment at that stage. So thank you, President.
Great, thank you. I'd like to now see if there's a motion to approve the agenda. Second. Okay. All those in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? The agenda is approved. Is there a motion and a second to approve the December 13th, 2024 meeting minutes?
Support.
Okay. All those in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. The minutes are approved. Okay. So, this being our first meeting of 2025, I want to wish everyone a happy new year. And for those in our community who celebrated, a happy lunar new year. Our international students and scholars bring with them such diverse traditions and add so much to our cultural tapestry here at Michigan State University. Very importantly, our diverse and cosmopolitan university community offers us lived experiences and perspectives that are essential to being a leading global public research university, and we're a proudly public research university. Just yesterday, we honored recipients of our Excellence in Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Awards. So I want to offer up congratulations to all those making such commendable efforts to make our campus the best that it can be for all members of our community. As I've underscored since day one, our university remains committed to our inclusive values. I enjoyed our conversation yesterday with members of the Black Student Alliance, where we listened, conversed, and talked about solutions to improve the experience of our minoritized students on our campus. And so I want to thank those students for engaging in that way with my leadership team and members of the board.
Choose to arrest me rather than talk with students.
Simply put, we must forge a community that is welcoming, safe, and inclusive so that all our students may not merely persist, but will thrive here.
Why do you keep acting as if you want to show up for your students, but then you cower and you hide? Why?
Thank you. We are
begging you.
Please.
We're asking for you to show up.
Let's continue with the meeting.
Show up for your community, but you refuse. President Gustafson, why did you arrest 5 students? Why did you personally order their arrests? Why won't you answer? Why won't you answer for what you've done? It's not public comment.
Simply put,
why did you arrest 5
students? We will forge a community that is welcoming, safe, and inclusive so that all our students may not merely persist, but will thrive here.
President.
Ensuring student safety.
We request that all individuals present please refrain from disrupting the meeting.
Why did you?
If the meeting is disrupted in a manner that prevents the board from conducting business or preventing members of the public from hearing or observing the proceedings, the meeting will be recessed or adjourned.
Hey, why would you consider divestment from Israeli apartheid? Why would you acknowledge the harm that you brought to students? Why do you refuse?
Why do you constantly choose profit over people?
Let's continue with the meeting, please.
Why did you arrest me rather than talk to students? Will you answer? Will you ever answer? Or will you just keep giving statements? Will you keep apologizing just for what you've done? When will you take the power that you have as board members?
Let's continue with the meeting, please.
Use it toward peace. Use it toward actually supporting your students. And why won't any of you respond?
How can you preach civil discourse when you won't actually meet with us and talk to us?
President Augustus, why won't you look at us?
So we're at the stage now. This is going to be, hold on, before we go with this, this is a final request to refrain from disrupting the meeting. If the meeting is disrupted further, the meeting may be recessed to allow for the board's consideration of scheduled action items or adjourned. To recess. Is there a second? All in favor, please indicate by a show of hands. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. All those opposed? All those abstain? The motion is approved. The meeting is recessed.
Okay, thank you. And we are obviously reconvening now. And as we continue the meeting, we have appreciate our students agreeing to accept the invitation that Chair Tebe and I put forward earlier this week to meet in April prior to the next board meeting. And we've agreed that we will, within the next 2 weeks, meet with leaders of the coalition such that we can set a plan for that meeting in April. So thank you, and thank you for all staying with us. All right. So as I was saying, and I've underscored since day one, our university remains committed to our inclusive values. I enjoyed, again, the conversation yesterday with members of the Black Student Alliance where we listened, conversed and talked about solutions to improve the experience of our minoritized students. And simply put, we must forge a community that is welcoming, safe, and inclusive so that all of our students may not merely persist at Michigan State University, but that they will thrive here at Michigan State University. I can't think of a more concrete example of our determination to live our values than the new Multicultural Center, which we will officially open this afternoon, and I hope all of you can join us there. There, we will have spaces and programs that will advance multicultural education, spark intellectual curiosity, promote shared experiences, and support strategic goals, including raising graduation rates, something that we're committed to, while better preparing graduates for the diverse and interconnected world that they will enter. I also know and recognize that the changing federal landscape has created uncertainty for many of us here at Michigan State University, and its impacts on students, faculty, and staff have caused concern among many Spartans. So I want to stress here again that our commitment to our mission remains unshakable. Our values are unchanged, and we will remain committed to ensuring an inclusive and welcoming campus community. to educating and uplifting our students, to conducting innovative research that advances the common good, and to serving and strengthening communities across Michigan, from Monroe up to Keweenaw. As I've shared in several community messages, we will continue to pay close attention to these changes at the federal level. And that includes already mobilizing rapid response teams of leaders and experts here on campus and in Washington, D.C., to analyze potential impacts on campus life here for our students, international students and scholars, our research and teaching, and finance and tax policies for our people and their work. So please know that we'll continue to keep Spartans updated as the situation evolves. I'll be sending another campus message out early next week with information about how the community can receive these updates on a regular basis. Despite these challenges, we're starting our spring semester with great momentum, and I want to briefly mention some of the highlights. We're working toward our strategic goal of $1 billion in annual research expenditures, and we're well on our way with over $930 million this past year. And while that dollar amount sounds nice, it's about the impact that that work has on society. I want to offer a shout-out to my predecessor and our former provost, Teresa Woodruff, who last month became the first Spartan to be honored with the National Medal of Science. Her pioneering research in the emerging field of oncofertility, combining oncology and reproductive health, is now gaining distinction for Michigan State as she works in her role as MSU Research Foundation professor. Medicine and health care offer Michigan State a great opportunity to grow our research and education programs together with our service to people across Michigan and beyond. And that's why I'm looking forward to today's research presentation by Howard Crawford of Henry Ford Health and Assistant Professor Jennifer Klump from our College of Human Medicine. They are colleagues now in the battle against pancreatic cancer, the third most fatal form of the disease in the United States. This is a great example of how our relationship with Henry Ford Health is adding new dimensions to our research, and we'll hear from these researchers shortly. And with the master services agreement that we've now signed with Henry Ford Health, we're moving forward with the level of clinical service integration that we envisioned in our original 30-year partnership agreement signed in 2021. This integration will include things like joint recruiting for medical specialists, collective contract negotiation, and collaborative patient care. Meanwhile, our Health Sciences Council has been working with me to develop our vision for a novel approach to medical education and service more fully. To leverage our unique situation of hosting two world-class medical colleges, an evolving College of Nursing, and an amazing College of Veterinary Medicine that builds on our research, teaching, and clinical excellence aimed at a one health, one team approach to training the very best healthcare providers in the nation. 2 weeks ago, I hosted several Michigan healthcare leaders at Cole's House to discuss how MSU can be more impactful in healthcare. We talked about applying new technologies such as artificial intelligence and machine learning to telehealth, to drug discovery, to novel patient care models, and most importantly, given our unique situation of housing two medical colleges, the opportunity to possibly rewrite the playbook for interprofessional medical education that will reframe the way we train physicians and healthcare providers for the future. It was a very enlightening, and let me just say, a very enlightening gathering of these leaders across the state. And let me just say to stay tuned. We're about to do something really special, and MSU will be change agents in healthcare. You've heard me talk about MSU being a talent activator for Michigan, and get used to hearing this, because that will be a consistent theme as we move forward. We place more college graduates into jobs and careers in state than any other university. We are committed to serving as a talent activator for the state of Michigan. Just last week at a leadership retreat, it was nice to hear our recent top 10 ranking among public universities for the employability of our graduates, applauded by other colleagues in the University Innovation Alliance. You'll recall that Michigan State was a founding member of this group of peer institutions dedicated to sharing best practices in supporting student success. And this week, we announced the structure and leadership of our Green and White Council, which I'd announced at my presidential investiture in September. This will be a group of approximately 16 leaders and executives across Michigan who will launch a set of initiatives to amplify MSU's role as Michigan's state university and help shape the state's workforce and economy. And I'm charging the council with pursuing initiatives that are bold and impact-driven, feasible and sustainable, and most importantly, are uniquely MSU. To provide an environment where each member of the university community can achieve their highest success, each of us must feel safe here. We're working to instill this sense of safety by means such as our ongoing work to prevent and respond to relationship violence and sexual misconduct. To help guide our work, we will again survey the campus after spring break with our third No More survey. So I encourage people to look at it, look for it, and to please participate in the survey. And as we approach the second year mark of the violence our campus experienced 2 years ago on February 13th, I'm aware of how such a traumatic event continues to affect members of this community. As we remember those students we lost, those injured, and all those impacted, we've been reaching out to remind students and employees about this year's commemoration and the supportive resources that we've put in place. Most classes won't meet on February 13th, but the university will otherwise remain open. We have a detailed list of events for that date on the Spartans Together website. I do want to take this opportunity to acknowledge an approaching milestone for the university, and that's our 170th anniversary of our founding on February 12th, 1855. Through the years, Spartans have celebrated our triumphs and mourned our tragedies together. And we move forward together, resolved to make this a better world for our families, communities, and the world we live in. Among the people who've been so important to helping us do that is Thomas Glossmacher, who joins us today for his last meeting as Executive Vice President for Administration. I want to offer my thanks to Dr. Glossmacher, who has served in this interim EVP capacity for the last 14 months. At the same time, he's retained his role as director of the Facility for Rare Isotope Beams, better known as FRIB, FRIB. When Vennie Gore steps into the EVP position on March 3rd, Dr. Glossmacher will be able to focus once again on further advancing MSU's excellence in nuclear physics. So we're grateful for Dr. Glossmacher's service in this role, and I'm looking to see where he didn't come back. Okay, let's give him a round of applause. He's wearing two hats and carrying a heavy load, so he's probably off back over at FRIB right now taking care of business. So with that, let's now turn to the next item on today's agenda. And again, thank you all for being here today. We are going to now turn to Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, for our gift, grant, and contract report.
Good morning. Chairperson Kelly, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is from November 20th, 2024 through January 9th, 2025. The total value for this period is $81,873,741.
Is there a motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The gift, grant, and contract reports approved. Vice President Gage, I'll now ask you to introduce today's speakers.
Yeah, thank you. As you alluded to earlier, I think this partnership with Henry Ford Health and Michigan State University is going to be transformational. And so we have a very special presentation this morning from two experts in the field of pancreatic cancer research that demonstrates the positive potential of our partnership. Jennifer Klump, recently joined MSU from an institution you might know, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I don't know if you had anything to do with the recruiting, but she joined us in August as an assistant professor in the Department of Medicine in the College of Human Medicine. And she's identifying how specific genes and drug targets are important in pancreatic cancer. She is the author of two seminal papers published back-to-back in Science magazine last year. Dr. Howard Crawford is an international leader in pancreatic cancer research focused on tumor formation and inflammation. In 2020, he was recruited to lead Henry Ford Health's pancreatic cancer research program. He has since recruited and leads a team of young scientists focused on cellular plasticity, tumor-stroma interactions, and racial disparities in pancreatic cancer. He also holds an appointment at MSU in the Department of Pharmacology and Toxicology. Their team science approach is building on our joint expertise and finding synergies that expand our work to discover new therapies for various cancers and other diseases. Their full bios are in your packet. I'd also like to mention that our chief administrative officer of the partnership is here today, Terry Grebe, who's really been helpful in forging this relationship. Now, please welcome Dr. Jennifer Klump and Dr. Howard Crawford. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gates, for the introduction, and thank you to the board members for hosting us while we give this presentation of what I think is one of the crown jewels of the partnership between Henry Ford and MSU, and that is the Pancreatic Cancer Research Alliance that has formed between us. And Dr. Klump is going to take over for me at the end and show exactly where we are with conquering this disease. So why do we focus on pancreatic cancer? The statistics are right before you. It's got a five-year survival rate of 13% currently. The statistic that brought me into the field is the second one. When you find out that someone has been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, they have about 9 to 10 months to live. That statistic has not changed over the past few decades. And of course, when someone is diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, the first message they hear is get your affairs in order. And that's why they need to come to an academic medical center to get second opinions, to be on clinical trials, which is one of the things that we are trying to make sure we have a robust program for. It is the third most common cause of cancer-related deaths in the country. It surpassed breast cancer in 2016. It's second only to lung and colon cancer. It's going to pass colon cancer around 2030. And one statistic that's important for us is that only about 20% of pancreatic cancer patients are eligible to have surgical removal of their cancer. And of those people that have surgical removal, still 80% of those will perish from the disease within 5 years. But it's the only curative procedure that we have at the moment. So our vision for the Pancreatic Cancer Alliance is that we flip this around. Our 10-year goal is to change this from a 20% eligible for surgical resection for cure to 80%. And there are many methods that we're going to employ to accomplish this, and I think we're well on our way as a field, a very collaborative national and international field. So this on the top row shows the leadership at Henry Ford that is leading this. I am the scientific director of this group. I've recruited several young faculty members. You see the first four down there that collectively look at all aspects of this disease. And I was really thrilled when Michigan State recruited Jenny and Jeff Klump. The last name's not a coincidence. They are married. That are absolutely at the forefront of conquering this disease. So our progress, just to summarize right here in the slide, since I started, we have gathered about $16 million of funding coming from the National Institutes of Health, from various organizations dedicated to pancreatic cancer research, such as Lustgarten Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, locally, the Sky Foundation in Detroit, and we are a National Center of Excellence designated by the National Pancreatic Foundation. So to get into the science just very briefly, this is a word cloud. This is a word cloud generated by a researcher who sequenced a bunch of different pancreatic cancers from patients. And you see the largest words in the word cloud are the mutations that occurred most frequently in those patients. So the biggest word you see there is called KRAS. KRAS is an oncogene, a tumor promoting gene. It is the initiator of pancreatic cancer. It is mutated in many other different types of cancers, but it is the prime mutation in pancreatic cancer. Several years ago, as part of the Pancreatic Cancer Action Network, I'm on the Scientific Medical Advisory Board of this group, they decided that in 2007, we're going to go to the Hill every single year and advocate Congress to give more funding to pancreatic cancer, which was severely underfunded at the time. And in their infinite wisdom, the Congress decided that we wouldn't really focus exactly on pancreatic cancer. We'd expand it to cancers that had less than a 50% five-year survival rate. And the top two there were lung cancer and pancreatic cancer. And that's what's called the Recalcitrant Cancer Act. So this is an indication of how public advocacy and working with the government can actually fund our laboratories working on this disease. And this initiative started a subset, a RAS initiative. So KRAS is a member of this RAS family. So by targeting these RAS oncogenes, we could probably conquer both pancreatic cancer, and it's also very frequently mutated in lung cancer. So the RAS initiative was funding research to try to find inhibitors for this RAS oncogene. But when I was young, it did happen, that we always considered the RAS oncogene as completely undruggable. We called it the greasy ball. You couldn't attach a drug anywhere to it. But since the NCI RAS initiative was created, the statement I heard at a meeting just in September as one of the premier oncologists in this field, the quote's right there. My slide is not large enough to list all of the drugs in the clinic right now that target RAS. And we're very fortunate now to have recruited somebody that's at the forefront of looking at, don't jump, don't laugh, it's true, at the forefront of conquering this oncogene and therefore this cancer. So I'm going to introduce you here to Jenny.
Thank you. So how do pancreatic cancers form? Initially, there's a founder cell, and in this case, it has a KRAS mutation. The cell starts dividing rapidly. It acquires new mutations. And eventually, you get this very diverse tumor that has all sorts of cancer cells in it with different mutations in them. So the RAS inhibitor comes in. It hits most of the mutations, cancer cells, but it only shrinks the tumor in most cases. And the RAS inhibitor has been shown to be very effective at shrinking the tumor. So this opens our first therapeutic option, which is now these patients might be eligible for surgery. Unfortunately, if you don't kill all the cancer cells, the process starts again and the tumor relapses. And that ultimately leads to metastasis and tumor cells going to other organs and doing the same process over and over again. Unfortunately, RAS inhibitors are not a magic pill. They're not completely curative. Cancer cells are tricky. Pancreatic cancer is no exception. They find ways to activate signaling pathways and proteins downstream. And when we started looking at this during my postdoctoral fellowship at University of North Carolina at the Lineberger Comprehensive Cancer Center, we noticed that there were two pathways that were frequently being activated in patients that had refractory tumors following RAS inhibitor treatment. So in collaboration with several others at UNC, we worked on trying to figure out which of these two pathways was critical in driving the reoccurrence of cancer. And what we found is for KRAS cancers, it's almost always a protein called ERK. And we figured out that you can't target ERK. Unfortunately, ERK inhibitors are too toxic. So we are now working really hard to try to find ways to target ERK indirectly. So looking at new drug combinations to block it as a resistance mechanism. Our research actually got quite a bit of attention, which was very exciting. The NIH director wrote about it in her blog, and it even showed up in the summary of it in the New England Journal of Medicine, written by a Michigan State alumni, Dr. Piero Lito. So now my husband Jeff and I are both tenure track professors in the Department of Medicine at Michigan State University, and our research is really focused on trying to identify ways to make it so that ERK is no longer the Achilles heel of RAS inhibitors, finding ways to better understand how ERK signals and drives resistance, and find ways to target it indirectly. A big reason of why we came here was that we knew we were joining a community. We knew from our time at UNC that our research had only been successful because it was team science. It was lots of different individuals coming together with different ideas, different skill sets, and working together for one common cause. So we're very excited to be here. What is the driver for us? Well, when Howard started studying pancreatic cancer, the survival rate was less than 5% for 5 years.
You're welcome.
When I started, it was less than 10%. Right now, it's at 13%. And the goal is that using RAS inhibitors and identifying new drug combinations and maybe making more patients eligible for surgery with the RAS inhibitors initially shrinking the tumor, we can increase the survivorship. I think many of us have been to some sort of 5K cancer advocacy event. And one of the most touching things at the beginning is when they honor all of the survivors. I'd gone to many for breast cancer and bladder cancer and other cancer types. But the first time I went to one for pancreatic cancer, I lost it. There were so few people wearing these survivor shirts. And then we went back the next year, and they were different people and not the same people, and still so few. So that's what our overall goal is. And that's what we're excited about this partnership enabling us to do. Thank you so much for your time, and we'll be happy to answer any questions.
I just wanted to say thank you. This is very important work. I'm sure a lot of people in this room have known people that have passed away from pancreatic cancer. As a child, my pastor, it was one of those very rapid ones where as soon as he found out, we didn't. And my friend Sarah just lost her mom on the 25th of January from pancreatic cancer. So thank you for everything you guys are doing. This is a really important work that you're doing. So
thank you. And we're sorry.
We're very sorry. Thank you.
I have a question for you. Recently, I saw something on the news. I think it was like a CBS Sunday Morning piece where they were talking about using AI to sequence and map the proteins. Like that we're on the verge of this, like because mapping maybe those inhibitors is so difficult that there's a way to leverage AI to speed up the process like tenfold or 50-fold. Is that something that is in the hopper for your field that's going to be better for us in finding more inhibitors?
Her husband would be perfect.
Yeah. So this is a much more computational based question. So my number one collaborator, who I happen to be married to, he's a computational biologist. So we have really nice skill sets, and he's already started looking at down some of these avenues. I think that it is important, but AI only takes you so far. You have to go in the lab, you have to use models, and you have to really prove and really dissect it in a more natural setting.
But they're an important part of our team, that we have to have somebody to tell us mm-hmm. where the roadblocks are on the computational side so that we can go back into the lab and find the answers for them so that we can keep this process moving.
You talked earlier about the diverse tumor that sets in early, and how does that impact the ability to have clinical trials with this type of a cancer and the various drugs that are being used?
The hardest thing about pancreatic cancer clinical trials is it's not the most common cancer. It's only 9th or 10th most common cancer. It's just it's one of the most deadly. So finding patients to enroll within clinical trials is very difficult. And then, of course, there's competition within groups to try to recruit them. So it can be very difficult. And we was mentioned with Dr. Gage's introduction that there's also a racial disparities angle in this. African Americans are 20% more likely to get pancreatic cancer, and trying to get those patients to enroll in clinical trials is an additional challenge. But fortunately in Detroit, I'm very proud to represent that community. And so collectively, all of us are looking at the racial disparities for that so that we can translate those findings into the clinic and then into clinical trials.
It's interesting because I think on paper, it looks like such an easy cancer to treat because it has one driver mutation. But unfortunately, there's a lot of other mutations that acquire in combination with it. And some of those mutations then get selected for when you treat the tumor. And that's how the tumor relapses.
We call it whack-a-mole. You hit one thing, it pops up in another. You have to hit that.
Thank you, Dr. Klump, just for your passion specifically, right? To do this work, but also to feel this work is the most important. And that's what I always wanted, a practitioner and a scientist. So I appreciate that. Dr. Crawford, I was going to raise the fact that Henry Ford Health is in Detroit, doing good work in Detroit, and you named it and named racial disparity as one of the biggest challenges that we have in health overall, and that Detroit is the epicenter, a nice place, the perfect place to do this work, to kind of tackle some of the inequities that we're seeing in health. And so I'm just really grateful to both of you. Continue the good work. If I can be of any help, please let me know.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And yes, we do take it very personally. We're happy to have the biggest party ever for the one person, whoever it is, doesn't have to be us, who cures pancreatic cancer. We're all going to celebrate. We'll be happy to be out of a job. That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Klomp, welcome. Welcome to Michigan State, Jennifer. Welcome. Having been in Chapel Hill, as I was, there's that Southern charm there. There's this Midwestern. Okay, you got it. Well, then you know the Midwestern warmth, as I like to call it. So welcome. And as I've said over and over, go Spart Hills. So, all right. Well, thanks so much for that wonderful presentation. We're now going to turn to Interim Provost Thomas Yitzko for personnel actions and information reports.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. Trustees, I present for approval the items on the February 2025 list of personnel actions. I'm pleased to recommend Titus Awukushe, PhD, Associate Dean, International Studies and Programs, for a change in title to Vice Provost and Dean of International Studies and Programs, effective January 15th, 2025. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions.
Okay, is there a motion to approve the personnel action?
Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, the personnel actions are approved.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, we'll begin our committee reports, and at this time I'll ask Trustee Sandy Pierce for the report on budget and finance.
Okay, thank you. We have one authorization to plan, two to proceed, and then one lease. Let me start with the authorization to plan. As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State hereby authorizes the administration to plan for the project titled Farm Lane Road and Utility Reconstruction.
Your support. Okay.
Dan Bowman, of course, is available if anyone has any questions or wants further discussion. If not, we can call for a vote.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. The motion passes.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Spartan Stadium Renovations for University Advancement, the second and the third floors, with a project budget of $15 million.
Second.
Support.
Okay.
Kim Tobin is also available if anyone has any questions or comments. If not, we can call for the vote.
Great. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chair of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Intercollegiate Athletics, Outdoor Tennis Courts, and Support Building, with a project budget of $10 million. And I should mention that the entire $10 million is a donor gift.
Support.
Alan Heller is here if anyone has any questions or needs further discussion. If not, we can call for a vote.
I just have one thing. I don't need a question. I just had a comment.
Go ahead.
I support this, but just it's worth pointing out that this is really, really good because of our awesome tennis team and the generosity of our donor, Ms. Sekia. We're entering a really strange area in college athletics where there's never been more money flowing into it than there is right now. Yet there's all kinds of stressors on sports not named football or basketball. So this is a wonderful example of alumni stepping forward to support an important sport. And as we go forward in the future months, it's something that's on my mind because our athletes are important to us. They provide some very, very awesome graduates that we find ways to support all of our Olympic sports, what we call our non-revenue sports, both those that we have and those that we should have. And this is a great example of that. And it's going to be wonderful for those athletes. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? All right. All those in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chair of the trustee committee on budget and finance, I move that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby authorizes the administration to enter into a long-term lease with the American Tower upon such terms and conditions as may be acceptable to our president or the president's designee.
Support.
Support.
If anybody has any questions, Dan Bowman is here. If not, we can call for a vote.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
Finally, what I will say is that the Committee on Budget and Finance received updates on the fiscal year 26 budget outlook, housing and dining, the investment return, as well as operating funds return results, and the retirement plan and concessions. It was a healthy meeting, and we'll have more information for you at the board meeting in April. That concludes my report. Great.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. At this time, we'll turn to Trustee Renee Kanacki Jefferson for the committee report for academic affairs.
Thank you so much, and good morning. I have two motions to bring forward, and then I'll also give a brief update about our committee's work when we met in anticipation of today's meeting. First, on behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves revisions to BOT 304, Board of Trustees course fee courtesy, as indicated in Attachment A.
Support.
And if there are any questions, Interim Provost Yaisko is available to discuss.
Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
The second motion. On behalf of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees, as the sole corporate member of MSU Healthcare, Inc., hereby adopts the attached amended and restated bylaws of MSU Healthcare, Inc.
Support. Okay.
And we have Norm Hubbard available if there are any questions.
Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
When the committee met, we also received updates regarding the Higher Learning Commission and unionization. Dr. Teresa Mastin provided a presentation on innovations in reappointment, promotion, and tenure, and new leadership development and trainings. The Board of Trustees bylaws were also discussed, and I also just want to extend a special welcome to one of our newest trustees who is a member of the Academic Affairs Committee, and that's Trustee Bahar Cook. So, and that concludes my report on the Committee for Academic Affairs.
Great. Thank you, Trustee Kanacki Jefferson. We'll now turn to Vice Chair Brianna Scott for the committee report on audit, risk, and compliance.
Thank you, President Guskowitz. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby reappoints Plant and Moran as the university's external auditors for the 2024-25 fiscal year at a fee of $416,500 in accordance with the Board of Trustees Policy 104, Auditor Rotation.
Board. Okay.
Lisa Frace is available if there are any questions or a need for discussion.
Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby approves the following: a sponsored research agreement with Advertent Biotherapeutics, Inc., and a sponsored research agreement with Joel Energy Storage Technologies, LLC.
Board. Okay.
Vice President Gage is here if there is any discussion or questions.
Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion passes.
Additionally, the committee received an information security presentation and an update from the MSU Office of Civil Rights. And I would also like to welcome our newest Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee member, Trustee Balow, to our committee. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. I'll now turn to Chair Kelly Tebay for the committee report on student life and culture.
The Student Life and Culture Committee received presentations on student diversity efforts, the campus anti-hazing bill, and the university's student tax and fee structure. Today, we will hear from Student Veterans Resource Center. I'd like to introduce Director Patrick Forsteck and student veteran Jay Velez. Patrick is a United States Marine Corps combat veteran who has worked in higher education, serving veterans and military-affiliated students since 2013. Patrick has worked at private and nonprofit institutions of varying sizes and roles ranging from VA school certifying official to academic advisor to resource center director. Jay Velez is a retired Army First Sergeant with 22 years of active military and is currently pursuing a BA in history, social studies, education at Michigan State University. He is married to Sarah Velez, also an MSU alum, and father to his sons, Joseph and Bradley. Patrick?
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, wow. It's nice. Thank you, Chairperson Tebay, and good morning to the board and President Guskowitz. Let me see. They gave me a clicker. That's a problem. I have 3 minutes. So I'm going to briefly cover a little bit of our history, who we support, and some student facts, and I'll turn it over to Jay. So the SVRC opened in 2015. Just last month, we celebrated our 10-year anniversary. Originally, it was staffed by a veteran resource representative, which was a state grant-funded position. My predecessor, Sarah, was that VRR, and actually, she was my supervisor at the last school we worked at together. So I came over with a lot of inside information on how the program worked. In 2018, that office transitioned from being supported by a grant-funded employee to a single MSU employee. And it's structure that remained in place until just last November, where we were able to finally hire a coordinator. And what's today? Friday, the end of my third week for our new admin assistant. And I can't say enough positive things about those two individuals and how much they've already impacted our capacity and ability to help our military-affiliated students. We, as mentioned on the slide, we support and provide resources for veterans, active duty, service members, Guard, Reserve, and military dependents. I like this shameless plug on the right. I changed my slides slightly, but the office opened in 2015, but MSU has a long history of supporting military-connected students, and I wish I had time to talk to you about the alum that I've met, the Vietnam veterans, the people that were here in the 70s, that were getting this brochure from an office that was right across the hall from where I am at today. And the funny thing about the VA is about 80% of that pamphlet is still accurate. The phone numbers are not, and I'm sure people have moved offices, but the forms are the same. Moving on to, and I apologize, I'm not a wordy slide person, and I told them I can do this in 33 minutes or about 45 if you let me. We support over 2,400 military-affiliated students, and it's actually over 3,000 if we include the students that are in ROTC and the students that are here using DOD funding for our College of Human, Vet, and Osteopathic Med. And that includes 500 veterans, active duty, guard, and reservists, as well as over 2,000 military dependents. And that's a particular point of pride for me. When we opened in 2015, we had about 702 military-connected students. It's about 250% growth in under 10 years. And a big part of that is our military-dependent population. We have over 800 GI Bill users. And to give you an idea of the impact of these students, it's about $22.5 million a semester, seven and a half-ish in post 9/11 GI Bill funds annually. And something that we don't often talk about in my space is how that impacts the community. And that's well over $5 million in funds injected right into East Lansing through monthly housing allowances and other benefits they receive. I also want to call attention to a couple programs I'm particularly proud of. And Jay has even less time than I do, but he's also one of our PAVE team leaders. But last year we received an Innovator Award, inaugural recipient from the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency for our work with the Warrior Scholar Project. We have been a gold level vet friendly institution since the inception of that program in 2015. There was a year where there was two. So it's like 10, 9 or 10 straight years, but we've had it every year they've offered it. So we've got the Peer Advisor for Veteran Education Program. We're a new Warrior Scholar Project partner institution, which it's a phenomenal program. Summer Bridge, we bring in about 10 to 15 vets from around the country to experience college life at a institution like Michigan State. We're joining schools like Harvard, Princeton, Yale, MIT, William & Mary. We're one of the few non-Ivy League schools in this program, outside of like Notre Dame and UC Irvine. And they came to us, and their CEO is a Michigan alum, which I like getting them there a little bit too. And we're working on rolling out psych armor. So we're working on the contract right now. I actually got about three emails since I was sitting here. But we're going to be providing programming training for university employees to learn how to be better supporters for our military affiliated students. And then really quick as I can, approximately 80% of our military connected students are transfer students. There are veterans that served four or more years on active duty and got out. Now they're coming back as transfers. About 15% of them are in that traditional college age of 18 to 23. About half have children, half are married. We partner with a lot of other offices in our space, Student Parent Resource Center, for example, because again, children and lots of other, life responsibilities. About one in three have a service-connected disability. And this is a phenomenal one, bottom middle, 77% graduation rate. The national average for vets, I think it was sub 20% until the VA just came out with a new report. Across the nation, it's more about 47% now, and we're up in the high 70s. So not only are they showing up here in great numbers, they're graduating quickly. And about 30% of our student population is female. I have a note on there that data is limited to legal sex. But calling that out because nationally it's about 10%. And they're showing up as well and taking on leadership roles on campus. And just to give you an idea of where they are, everywhere. Top colleges are going to be the Broad College of Business, Social Science, and Ag and Natural Resources. So, Jay, I'll turn it over to you for some remarks.
No need for a clicker. I don't have any slides. President Guskiewicz, ladies and gentlemen of the board, thank you so much. I'm super humbled to be here today and just sort of share my experience as a military-connected student here at MSU. I'm truly grateful for MSU giving me the opportunity to actually come here and pursue my second dream, which is to actually be an educator. I am not an outlier when it comes to veteran students. We are not common. Most of us are untraditional students. Like Patrick said, half of us have children. Most of us are older than 22. So we have some life experiences that we bring to the MSU community. And when I first got here, my biggest hurdle was actually finding the SBRC. It's like kind of tucked away in this back corner in sort of a cave in the basement of a building, right? But once I found it, it has become such a cornerstone of my experience here at MSU, just because it's provided common community where I can integrate with other veterans. It has helped me navigate Chapter 31. Getting that all squared away for myself. The Disabled Veterans Assistance Program, when I first got here, that's sort of what I depended on to actually pay for my tuition and get me through here. And there's nobody that really understood it. So Patrick and all of his knowledge, he's kind of like my Yoda is what I call him, right? he was able to connect me first with the registrar's office. They couldn't give me answers, but then he connect me with the ombudsperson, and we got that all handled and squared away. And that's my experience, but I can tell you that the SBRC sees every military connected student as an opportunity. We're not just here to get an education. We're here for the experience. We're here to expand the name of MSU once we leave here. So I'm just, once again, just super grateful for the opportunity to be here. And Penny, any questions? That's all I have.
Thank you for sharing that. I would just, you might be already doing this, but if you're not, there are a lot of companies, including the one that I come from, that really recruit transitioning from the military into the private sector. And so if you do not have those connections, I would encourage you, because many of them in Michigan do have those programs, certainly ours does. And I would be happy to connect you.
Thank you.
I just want to say to both of you, thank you for your service and your sacrifice. I'm also very excited that you're interested in being a teacher, Jay. That's amazing. And Patrick, you were one of the first places that I visited when I got elected. I went down, I searched far and wide, as you said, Jay, in the basement of the Student Services Building. And I just have to say, I'm very excited that you're getting more resources into your department. But when I did visit, what you had done with that space, with the limited amount of resources that you had, was truly incredible. And I think it's a testament to you as a leader. And obviously, it's very clear that you're important to this university and to our veterans. And so thank you for all of your work. I really appreciate it.
Yes.
I'll just echo everything that's been said and thank you. And while that 77% graduation rate is certainly much better than the national average, what could we do to support our veteran and military affiliated students to get that graduation rate even higher? Are there resources that we currently are not providing that could be helpful?
President Guskowitz, thank you for that question. Actually, if I could advocate for anything for the SBRC, it would be space. Right now, we're sort of outgrowing ourselves. Because we are getting more staff in, which is phenomenal, but that's also sort of limiting the amount of study spaces. So as a PAVE advisor, one of the things I'm doing is a lot of outreach. I'm trying to get to those military-connected students to bring them in, and we're actually starting to grow quite a bit. We're kind of outgrowing our space.
Got to get them out of the basement.
Yes.
Yes.
We could use some windows.
We could definitely use some windows.
Yes.
Yeah.
But can I briefly, the only other thing, and I didn't have a lot of other talking points, but I'd like to add that number of GI Bill students that we have is 800. We don't have enough certifying officials. We just don't. We're supposed to have a ratio of about 1 to 125, and we're about 1 to 400 right now. And it is impacting our students with delayed payments. Students were expecting housing allowance payments on February 1st, and they're still not even certified. And that's a 2 to 3 week turnaround from certification to VA actually paying that out. So we're looking at students missing out weeks, if not months, on payments they're expecting to pay for food, rent, books, everything, really. I was a student veteran. I relied on that to feed my family. And that's something that we're making improvements. We're doing a lot of really great stuff. And I appreciate the kind words. That's an area that doesn't fall under my jurisdiction, but they could really use the support.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well done.
And this concludes my report. Oh, I'm in charge of that now. I forgot. Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks. All right. And now we will turn to our liaison's reports, and we'll start by hearing from our student liaisons. I'm not sure who's supposed to go first. Erin, yeah, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. This week, the Residence Halls Association released a statement of community support. Our e-board, leadership team, and General Assembly came together to compose a document communicating to both our constituents and community that even amidst national scrutiny on diversity, equity, and inclusion, RHA continues to commit ourselves to DEI. I have referred to our current constitutional rewrite at the last couple of board meetings. We are using this routine update to our governing documents to ensure that DEI efforts are codified into RHA systems and processes. We believe community is vital right now, and we are working closely with some of our identity-based groups on campus to help promote belonging and provide a deeper level of support to on-campus students. To quote from the statement, as a student government, it is our responsibility to advocate for the multitude of identities that make up the residents of Michigan State University. We are also working to ensure that our services are visible and able to provide support to as many MSU students as possible. Our goal this semester is to remind Spartans that RHA provides sponsorship opportunities for registered student organizations and university departments, free technology rentals for student groups, health and safety advocacy efforts, and representation in larger campus spaces like this one. Finally, as a representative for on-campus students at Michigan State, it is also my responsibility to speak on concerns that our constituents bring forward. A resident recently brought forward serious concerns about the investigative process for survivors of RBSM cases and asked RHA to advocate before the board and the Office of Civil Rights to improve the process for future claimants. We have since been able to meet with the Office for Civil Rights and have been met with cooperation in reviewing the matter. We plan to continue these discussions to ensure that this process feels more supportive for all involved. Thank you.
All right. Good morning. Last week, the ASMCU General Assembly met to discuss around 18 pieces of legislation. Some of the bills I would like to highlight are Bill 6155, which advocates for the MSU ID office to add the suicide prevention lifeline on the back of MSU IDs. Bill 6156, which allocates ASMCU money to add drink spike and prevention stickers to the MSU Union Health Vending Machine. Bill 6159, which advocates for April to be recognized as MSU Pride Month to ensure that students have the ability to celebrate their identities with their community and support systems at Michigan State. Bill 6161 had ASMCU send a letter of endorsement for the MSU esports team to ensure they are given funding to continue operations. Bill 6162 advocates for an optimal sustainability fee dedicated to sustainability practices and the development of sustainability projects at Michigan State. Bill 6164 advocates for support for immigrant students, families, staff, and faculty affected by mass deportation orders to ensure they are safe and advocated for. And lastly, Bill 6165 affirms ASMCU's continuous support for DEI initiatives on campus to ensure that environments where students feel valued and have equal opportunities remain on campus. These last two bills are highly important to us as we see trends and news coming from DC. We hope that MSU can be a place where students feel supported, safe, and protected, especially in times like this. Last semester, the General Assembly passed Bill 6151, which advocates for the retainment of the Duck Social Norm Campaign. After some conversations, the MSU Social Norms Campaign is set to bring the Ducks back, and we personally cannot wait to help promote healthy behaviors and positive social change. Plus, who doesn't love a duck shirt? ASMCU's elections for our General Assembly are coming up soon, and to encourage voting, we're holding a Design Your Own Voting Sticker Contest. If any students are interested in submitting a sticker design and having the potential of it being turned into an I Voted sticker, check out our Instagram for the template and more information. Last week, ASMCU released a statement in response to Bill 6154, which stands with ARCA-tenured faculty and asking for a consultative process with all members of ARCA in respect to the merging of the college with Cal, and for more options outside of the merger. While the university has begun a process in investigating the pros and cons of this merger, there has been concerns from ARCA students, faculty, staff, and alumni about transparency of this discussion. Thus, ASMCU does not support any plans to merge the college unless the process comes from a thorough and consultative process and asking for more comprehensive research plans outside of a merger. Lastly, in January, the General Assembly passed Bill 6153, which supported a vote of no confidence in the Board of Trustees and reaffirmed ASMSU's stance on divestment. The bill passed by a majority vote of the General Assembly and states that due to the removal of the term social conscious from BOT Policy 607, that the Board violated the Board of Trustees Code of Ethics and Conduct Standard 1. Further, students have felt inadequate support and acknowledgement towards issues that affect them and their communities. Thus, ASMCU votes no confidence in the Board of Trustees. We hope that from this, that you as the board are able to meet with students and discuss topics such as divestment and concurrent resolution for the removal of social conscious from BOT Policy 607 in order to clear violations of the code. This concludes my report. Thank you very much for the time, and I hope to see positive change for our students.
Thank you, and good morning. Thanks for the time. I'm excited to share some updates on what the Council of Graduate Students has been working on in the new year to better support our graduate and professional student community. A key element of graduate careers is professional development opportunities, and to help enable such opportunities, COGS will be hosting our 17th Graduate Academic Conference on February 22nd at the MSU Union. This is a scholarly conference organized by a hardworking committee composed entirely of graduate and professional students, and we'll be welcoming presenters across a wide range of disciplines, departments, and programs to exhibit their creative or scholarly works. The event will include poster presentations, oral presentations, and a 3-minute thesis competition for the competitive folks out there, as well as workshops to help presenters hone their communication and networking skills. We are also excited to welcome back MSU Graduate School alumni who will serve as judges for the presentations to help us recognize our outstanding students. This year, we received a record number of 110 presentation submissions, I am incredibly proud of the hard work of the organizing committee and look forward to learning about the amazing work of my colleagues on February 22nd. The event is open to all attendees, either students or the public, and I welcome anyone that is interested to register to attend. You can find all the information on our website, cogs.msu.edu/GAC. I'm also excited to announce recent developments from another committee, which is our Graduate Health and Wellness Committee. This is another hardworking COGS committee composed entirely of graduate and professional students, and their job is to develop programming to support the wellness of our graduate and professional students. Recently, this committee has organized a Meet the Resource series that is happening every Tuesday for the month of February and going a little bit into March, where we invite representatives from various departments and offices at MSU to present their resource to graduate and professional students. Over the coming weeks, we will hear from the Office of Financial Aid, the Ombuds Office, Human Resources, and also the Student Parent Resource Center. Again, this is open to all graduate and professional students and will also be held over Zoom so that we can reach graduate and professional students across all the MSU campuses. As we approach the anniversary of February 13th, this committee is also partnering with the United Resiliency Center in East Lansing to host an event on February 11th where the attendees will have the option of participating in a range of mindfulness activities designed to promote community and offer time for reflection. I think that this will offer great support to our graduate and professional students as they continue to overcome obstacles as they pursue their dreams. Lastly, I want to just briefly touch on how COGS is able to offer its services. A main reason we're able to do what we do is because enrolled graduate and professional students pay a tax every semester to contribute to the COGS operating funds. This tax rate is reviewed for renewal every 3 years. The last renewal was in 2022, so the next renewal will be happening later this year in 2025. All graduate and professional students can have their voice heard and vote on this renewal process. And so I just wanted to encourage any students that might be watching today, any graduate and professional students, to participate in that vote if they would like, and they can expect to hear more about it via email later this year. That concludes my report. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And now we'll hear from our faculty liaisons.
Great, thank you. Good morning. I really appreciate the opportunity to meet with you today. First of all, I want to thank SBRC and all the work that they do. Our veteran students, faculty, and staff are vital to our community. And thank you, Chair Tibe, for having their presentation today. There are many of us, as Trustee Pierce indicated, who would like to help with linkages to careers and community if of interest. The faculty are engaged in many university committees and committees within colleges and departments, institutes and centers to carry out important work across the university, truly many hundreds of volunteers. Today, I want to acknowledge their service. Their work is critical to the mission of our university and vital for our students and is often not acknowledged enough. Our university committees are led by strong leaders, addressing a broad range of issues from faculty affairs to matters vital to our undergraduate and graduate programs, and I also want to thank them for this. I also want to acknowledge our appreciation for our new trustees, Rebecca Behar-Cook, for her taking on the faculty liaison role for the board. I've had the opportunity to meet with her and already appreciate her questions, interest, and engagement, and look forward to our continued engagement. While I start with these positive notes today, I focus on concerns that faculty are having at present, some of which I mentioned to our Board of Trustees yesterday. Overall, I can tell you that this is a trying time for our faculty, for many of our students, and our community. The concerns are broad, touching on questions pertaining to cultural activities, immigration, classrooms, diversity, research, and much more. There are significant concerns about careers and livelihoods for the current and for the future, because actions today have long-reaching impacts well into the future. Members of our communities are questioning whether or not they should be celebrating their heritage, whether or not they should be going to their home countries to visit families, whether they will be able to get support, and whether or not they will be able to continue to pursue their planned work into the future. While perhaps some of these reactions may seem extreme, these are among the many concerns that we are hearing from our faculty and our students. The whirlwind of federal directives that have been coming and going and coming have been overwhelming. Websites and years of data are disappearing as if they never existed. Faculty are getting email messages with stoppages, pauses, and other daunting news. Over the past just over 2 weeks, faculty have been on federal research panels that were canceled midstream, others for which they spent hours preparing and were completely canceled. They have received notices to stop spending on grants, which support vital research, and often largely personnel support, supporting many students, which were then rescinded. We have received notices to stop research if it includes aspects that are against the law, without having a clear notion of what exactly is considered to be against the law. Faculty who are engaged in USAID projects received messages earlier in this week to let them know that their projects were halted. In 2023, this entailed $16 million in funding at MSU, including engagement in Feed the Future, the U.S. government's global hunger and food security initiatives. These changes are also occurring in some private foundations, with HHMI closing down their Inclusive Excellence 3 project just a few days ago, with barely a remnant of the intent of that program or programs with similar objectives on their website anymore. There are many concerns, and these represent only a few. I can tell you that the community is stressed. While it is realized that we are all in the same boat, wondering what will happen next, I sincerely hope that not only short-term savings, but long-term and short-term impact on students, our future workforce, and our nation's and our world's learning, training, and research future will be considered at the national level. What is done today will have long-term impact into the future on our innovation economy. I bring this to you today, Board, as you are leaders in the public sphere with influences that go far beyond these walls. I ask you to bring these concerns to decision makers beyond these walls. A challenge in making the case of the work of institutions, of course, is that there is often limited public understanding of the work that academics do, not only in teaching lecture courses, but certainly in terms of research and federally funded research. And often, unfortunately, there is not necessarily understanding even by others down the hall because of the sheer complexity of the work. Regardless of how uncomprehensible the research may seem at present, it is such work that can lead to world-changing impact into the future, such as the internet, cell phone, and Google, all innovations that sprung from academic research funded by the National Science Foundation, and basic research such as MSU's prior cisplatin and carboplatin discoveries, cancer drugs, which are on the World Health Organization's list of essential medicines, impacting the lives of millions of people 40 years after the discovery here at MSU. And certainly the work you heard about today provides a compelling story about the importance of federal funding for research and the importance of the academic missions led by our faculty. I thank you for your time, and for those who follow the governance policies. Now, as I close, I again mention the importance of the Board of Trustees to bring our concerns beyond the walls. And I thank you for abiding by the Article 8 of our governance policy on the relation of board and the university faculty, staff, and employees, which states in part, the board, the administration, and the faculty carry out their respective responsibilities, not as isolated entities, but as major and primary constituents of a total university organization and structure, which remains mutually interdependent and must be supportive of each other's purposes, functions, and obligations. We thank those of you who regularly take the time for discussion to hear about what is happening to our faculty, which also impact and have impacted over the past many, many years, over 500,000 students and prior students who've been through this university. This concludes my report. Thank you.
Clearly, I'm new to this. I want to thank you, Angela, and I really appreciate the continued conversations that we have with all of the faculty members. I think this is a very important time for us to continue that dialogue, and I know President Guskowitz has, you know, many different UCOM task force in place to make sure that we're continuing to deal with the never-ending cycle within the news. And I also want to make sure I'm clear that both our DEI panel discussion and our Lunar New Year celebration are being rescheduled, and we will continue to celebrate the diversity of our faculty and our students throughout the university and throughout the year. After this meeting today, we will cut the ribbon for an historic milestone, the opening of the first freestanding multicultural center, a long time in the making for many. More than a building, this center symbolizes advocacy, perseverance, and generation of student voices shaping MSU's future. Students played a vital role at every phase, from the feasibility study to design, features, and furnishings. A special thanks to Executive Vice President Benny Gore for his leadership in bringing this vision to life. And thank you to Vice President and Chief Diversity Officer Jabbar Bennett. I can't see him if he's here. And the team for the leadership as well. We look forward to celebrating this achievement with our Spartan community at today's ribbon cutting. I also want to share a couple of success stories, starting with MSU alumnus Mustafa Syed, who has been named a Schwarzman Scholar, a highly prestigious honor. He is only the second Spartan in history to receive this recognition, a testament to MSU's transformative education. Also, the College of Engineering Online Graduate Civil Engineering program ranks are in. The college has prepared 7,100 students to join the tech world, and 58% of College of Engineering alums have started their professional careers here in Michigan. We are number 5 nationwide and number 3 among public institutions. This marks the first time MSU has been included in this category, an incredible achievement for our faculty and staff. I also want to echo the president in congratulating President Emerita Teresa Woodruff in receiving the National Medal of Science. And I'd also like to give a shout out to MSU gymnast Nikki Smith, who is now ranked number 1 nationally in vault. In closing, thank you all to Spartans who do so much to make this community a special place. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Tebe. We'll now hear from Vice Chair Scott.
Thank you. Happy New Year, everyone. I know it's February, but Happy New Year. I want to just start off by thanking President Guskowitz and Chair Tebe for the leadership that they actually just displayed this morning. I thank you all for having the wherewithal to talk with the students from Haraya and coming to a resolution that I think will benefit everyone. So thank you for your leadership displayed. I have a couple things that I wanted to talk about this morning. I'm going to try to go pretty quickly here. The first of which is just in celebration of Black History. I say the same thing every year. And that is that when we celebrate Black History Month, we aren't just celebrating Black history. We are celebrating what is American history, which belongs to all Americans. By collectively and consciously celebrating Black history, we are coming together and we continue to rewrite the narrative of our diverse nation. So let us celebrate it this month and those that were our heroes that came before us. As also we're beginning 2025, I wanted to take a moment to share my passion for agriculture and farming, a sector deeply connected to Michigan State University's land grant mission. As I mentioned before, and people laugh, but it is very true, in another life, I would like to come back as a farmer. And while I don't own a farm yet, I find great joy in visiting farms across Michigan and engaging with our agriculture community. Last month, I had an honor and an opportunity and privilege to visit Carnemart Farms in Fremont. I'd like to shout out Kent Carnemart and his sons. It is a family-owned farm. And I had the opportunity to meet with nearly 30 members of Michigan's farming and agribusiness industry. This visit reinforced the critical role that agriculture plays in Michigan's economy and MSU's commitment to advancing sustainability and innovation. And I'm grateful to everyone that participated. And I kind of wanted to give a little shout out to them because it was a pretty incredible, prestigious group of people that showed up for this. So from Nestle Gerber, we had Todd DeGreiger and Chris Follett. From Burnett Farms, we had Joel Smith. We had, and we're going to hear from him later on today, Ben LaCrosse from Michigan Farm Bureaus, who's in the house. Yay, Ben, I see ya. We had Star of West Milling Sustainable Director, Lisa Woodkey. From the Michigan Asparagus Council, we had Jamie Clover Adams. And from the Michigan Asparagus Marketing Cooperative, we had Sarah Greiner. I also had an opportunity to meet Troy Johnson, who is the owner of Johnson Grain Farms. And I think Rebecca Barhart-Cook said she got to meet him, I think, last week. He's an incredible person. Aaron Bennett from Bennett Farms.
from Greenstone Farm Credit Services, Reagan Gambarski. We had the Turkey Co-op there, the Vegetable Council, the Bean People. I mean, it was pretty incredible. So shout out to all of the people that showed up for that. It was pretty amazing. And our discussions during that meeting focused on agriculture, sustainability, and MSU's role in driving innovation in farming. I also shared key updates on MSU's agricultural research and initiatives, which continue to strengthen Michigan's farming future. I left with a renewed appreciation for MSU's leadership in supporting farmers, agribusiness, and rural communities, and also with my first experience getting to climb into a large tractor. And I sent Kevin the picture. I never knew they were so large. It was pretty awesome. So it just solidified to me that I will be a farmer when I retire from law. I'd also like to acknowledge trustees, I think you were there, T-Bay and Balo, who along with myself had the opportunity to attend the Martin Luther King Legacy Dinner. It was a beautiful community celebration, and it was the 45th annual commemorative of that. And as others have noted, this event highlighted our university's ongoing commitment to civil rights and community engagement. And the 21st annual Community Unity Dinner was a powerful reminder of Dr. King's vision and the importance of fostering unity, equity, and social justice within our campus and beyond. I'd like to also thank Dr. Jabbar Bennett, who is getting shout outs today, but he's not here for them, for everything that he has done and what his team has done to recognize and promote this important event and recognition in our community. The Multicultural Center, I'm super elated. I hope that Trustee T-Bay talks about her role in this maybe later today. This is a dream come true. This center is going to play a very crucial role in fostering a sense of belonging and support for our marginalized student populations. And it serves as a critical step forward toward building campus-wide support system and infrastructure for engagement opportunities. The Multicultural Center provides an inclusive environment for students to leverage programming designed to foster an informed, empowered, and compassionate community. And then lastly, I would like to acknowledge the very, I believe, robust and engaged conversation that the board and some fellow administrators had the opportunity to have. It was the first and hopefully not the last with BSA. I believe that that was an opportunity to engage that we all learned from, and I don't see any of the students here, but I'm looking forward to the continued conversations on how to make certain that this campus provides a safe space for them so that they can continue to thrive. And that concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Vice Chair Scott. Trustee Behar Cook.
Thank you. Before we begin, I just want to take a moment to express my gratitude to everyone who has supported me as I transition into this new role. Stepping into a new position like this takes a tremendous amount of support and onboarding, and I have been incredibly fortunate to have so many dedicated individuals guiding me, teaching me, letting me understand how all the pieces of the university fit together. So thank you for that. For the university employees, thank you for the time to ensure that I understand how MSU operates and who's responsible for the critical work that keeps this institution running. Board staff, I don't know where all of you are, but Lord knows I've been keeping you busy. I deeply appreciate your patience, diligence, and seamless organization in helping me navigate my early days as a trustee. Fellow board members and President Guskowitz, thank you for the warm welcome and for making this transition such a positive experience. And then to the supporters on my journey to becoming trustee, your encouragement and belief in my ability to serve mean the world to me. Looking ahead, I'm excited to continue learning, attending committee meetings, engaging with students, staffs, and faculty to better understand what matters most to our Spartan community. Serving as a Michigan State University is such an honor, and I am committed to doing my very best for the university over the next 8 years. So thank you for that little side note. But now is my opportunity to recognize faculty honorifics. As the newly appointed faculty liaison, I want to highlight some of the outstanding achievements of our faculty who continue to earn national and international recognition. Faculty achievements, Dr. Celine Aviente was named to the IEEE Signal Processing Society's 2025 class of distinguished lecturers. They will be representing MSU on a global stage, sharing her expertise and enhancing our reputation for research and innovation. To Dr. Devaya Victor, awarded the 2025 Creative Capital Award in Literature, selected from over 5,600 applicants, recognized by a distinguished panel of cultural leaders showcasing MSU's vibrant literary and creative arts community. And also Dr. David Biedenbeyer, College of Music, winner of the 2024 SUSE American Bandmasters Association Otswald Award for his trumpet concerto, River of Time. And as a side note, those of you of a certain age who grew up in Southeast Michigan, I was a member of the John Philip Sousa Club on W, whatever radio station it was. So I'm extra excited about that one. And then a testament to the culture and innovation and artistry. Part of this award is a testament to the culture and innovation of artistry that defines MSU's music program. These are just a few of the examples of our academic excellence, and I look forward to continuing to uplift and celebrate our community's many, many accomplishments. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Bahaka. Trustee Baylor.
Thank you, Dr. Fletcher. What a pleasure it's been so far to get started here as a trustee. You know, just as a humorous note, when I walked into the room this morning, I almost took my customary space on that back wall right there, and I saw my name tag up here. So this is a humbling honor to be a trustee. Let me explain. You know, as someone who has a deep love for this university, not having gone here, but for everything it represents and for all of the good things to all of the people around the state and our world, to have the opportunity to make a difference in the lives of our faculty and our students and our alumni is an amazing opportunity. You know, I've had some people tell me, like, why in the world would you want to be a trustee and be involved with all of the stuff that goes on campuses and all of the controversies? And I mean, Michigan State, I mean, come on. And I said, yeah, but guess what? At the end of our lives, when we're trying to take a tally of the score and we look back on the opportunities that we had to make an impact in people's lives, what an opportunity. Not all wealth is measured in dollars. My hand is extended in friendship to those brother and sister trustees that are sitting here at the table with me, to the people sitting along the sidewalls, to the people in the back seats, to the alumni and all the people listening around the state and around the world. From Albion to Zeeland, from the Zilwaukee Bridge to Algonac, all across the state, all 83 counties, 10 million people put their faith in us as trustees. We actually don't work for the university. Remember that. We work for the people of the state of Michigan that put us here. To Dr. Wilson's comments, we do so under a set of guidelines that provide for good governance and successful outcomes. Successful outcomes is what we're focused on. We'll continue our good work, and I think 25, under the leadership of our new president, Kevin Guskiewicz, we have a golden opportunity to not only meet people's expectations, but to exceed them. We truly are the best university in Michigan and world class. I'd like to give a shout out to my fellow new freshman trustee, Rebecca Bahar-Cook, and Dr. Fletcher for being kind enough to organize, and I'm not going to name names because I'll forget some, all of the people that have taken time to onboard us new trustees to help us understand the complexities of this 52,000 student amazing place we call Michigan State, which not only has a presence here in Lansing, but all over the state and around the world. I'd like to say that sometimes we have to roll up our sleeves and get our hands dirty and grind through some things. Not everything in this room is sunshine and roses, and that's okay. We welcome the challenges. We want to work through them to make our place better. I'd like to remind everyone that we all occupy only a small place on the timeline. President Guskiewicz talks often about the fact that we've been here for 170 years, and we'll be here for 170 more. All of us are fighting for the issues of our day and need to take the measure of what we truly represent, meaning that we're part of the larger whole. I challenge anyone to think back of who the board was in 2004 or 1998 or 2007 or the president in 1958. Some of you would know those, but most people don't. We do our work and then are largely forgotten. We seek to do well enough that history records our deeds favorably. I'd like to say that I'm very, very appreciative of the acts of courage the board has taken recently, such as releasing finally the 6,000 documents. I'd like to thank and recognize trustees Vassar and Deno for getting that going. I'd like to thank President Guskiewicz for his courage in announcements yet to come as to how the university is finally going to come to grips and give justice to all the brave sister survivors in 25. We have a lot of work to do. I'm just going to close again with how excited and wonderful the opportunity is. And I hope you all take the opportunity to work with us, reach out. I'm very reachable. And I hope to make about 1,000 new friends in the next year. And with that, I'll close. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Trustee Bailo. Trustee Deno.
Thank you. excuse me. Mike, it's great to have you on this side of the table. Same with you. Not that I've ever seen you on the other side, but I'm super excited to work with both of you. You know I can never help in any way. Please consider me an ally. I want to first start off by recognizing someone in the greater Lansing community lost last month on January 17th, Joanne Boss, who is the mother to MSU baseball coach Jake Boss Jr., passed away. At the young age of 78, Jake Boss Sr. and Joanne were married for 56 years. Joanne served for more than 25 years as an assistant director to the Southside Community Kitchen here in Lansing. Through her efforts, the kitchen has been able to feed on average 300 people a week. And in 2024, the Southside Community Kitchen served over 19,000 meals to those experiencing food insecurity. My wife Raina and I got to meet Joanne Boss at a Southside Community Kitchen event, and she just filled up the room, and she was just a great human being, and she's definitely going to be missed. My other quick comments are, again, thanks to Kevin Guskiewicz, President Guskiewicz, for your leadership, for your thoughtfulness, for your willingness to listen. I just really sincerely appreciate that. And also, again, thanks to all our first responders, especially law enforcement, for all you do for our community. Communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Trustee Pierce.
Thank you. So let me just start by, again, thanking the student liaisons for your leadership. It's an important role, and it's beyond what you currently do for your day job of being a student, so thank you. And for the faculty liaisons, again, a real step up to take a leadership position to represent all of the faculty, and we are here to support you. So thank you for that. Next week's going to be a tough week. We're coming on February 13th again, and I know that the students are coming together with the faculty and the staff to make sure that we remember those that have been impacted and those that continue to suffer. So my thoughts are with and prayers are with all of you. We're coming up also on President Guskiewicz's 1-year anniversary with us. So by the time we have a next board meeting, he will have surpassed the probation period. We're glad to have you here. We feel very, very lucky. A couple of shout outs to Judd Herzer. He is MSU's mobility director, and he's been appointed to Michigan's Council on Future Mobility and Electrification by our own Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And his leadership will really help drive Michigan's transportation future. We are the transportation state in this country. He's replacing Satish Utpa, am I saying that right? Who has been a steadfast Spartan voice for us on the council for so many years. So we want to thank Satish for an exemplary term as he moves on. Next, MSU, alongside 10 African universities and research institutes, continues to foster global collaboration. I was really proud to read that the 2024 Partnerships for Innovative Research in Africa grants awarded $500,000 to support multidisciplinary research. The teams included MSU, African institutions, non-governmental organizations, and universities worldwide. I'm so proud that we're involved in this. They strengthen research and education across continents. Some of this research includes farming for feed in Malawi, addressing agricultural labor burden in rural communities in East Africa, and partnerships for training caregivers to prevent Kanso disease. And for those of you like me that don't know what Kanso disease is, I looked it up. And it's a disease that is caused by malnutrition and high dietary cyanide intake. It's pretty serious, often causes death, and so we're helping to eradicate it. That's what my comments. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. Trustee Vassar.
Happy Black History Month. This is a time that we honor extraordinary contributions of Black Americans to our nation's history, culture, and progress. I would like to note that there would be no global culture without Detroit. We have Motown. At Michigan State University, we take pride in recognizing the richness of Black heritage across our campus. Congratulations to the 12 recipients of the Excellence in Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Awards, recognized yesterday for their dedication to fostering a more inclusive campus. Your efforts in creating positive change do not go unnoticed, and thank you for making our community stronger. Also, this month is an opportunity to celebrate remarkable Black Spartans, past and present, who embody excellence, leadership, and impact. Here are just a few names I'd like to highlight. Ernest Green, I'm sure you all know this fellow, a member of the historic Little Rock Nine who courageously advanced civil rights and continued his commitment to change at MSU. Ariel Downs is a current student whose generosity and leadership strengthened the Spartan community. She's also a part of MSU Green Line, the student calling program that connects alumni and donors to the university. Dr. Clifton Wharton, maybe you don't know who that person is either, a trailblazer in higher education whose legacy includes the Wharton Center for Performing Arts. He was, it's one of Michigan's premier cultural venues, and he was one of Michigan's premier leaders. Ronald Moore, a dedicated donor supporting initiatives such as the MSU Black Alumni Detroit Scholarship, the Unconditional Love Fund, and the Pride Endowment Scholarship Fund. Magic Johnson, my number for my AOL account. Yes, I have an AOL account because I'm an original.
I have one too.
Originals do. Okay. Dial up. OG. Dial up. Yeah. Hang up the phone so I can get on the internet. That. Yeah. 32. Ring with G. 32 for Magic Johnson. One of the most iconic alumni for MSU. Recently awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian honor, for his contributions on and off the court. Soror Dr. Chandra Marshall, who just delivered a Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. keynote for MSU's medical colleges. She was also the former MSUVA president and an amazing human. And finally, my favorite Spartan, Lucius Vassar. I'm sure you know him as well. A two-time alum, Lucius is a powerful partner, a public servant, a fantastic father, a beautiful Baba, an esteemed community leader, and one of the smartest people I know, second to Toni Morrison. Please recognize. MSU did a great job with that one, and I'm thankful for this institution for shaping and molding the love of my life and the life of my love. I want to also thank the BSA leadership who... they're not here today, and I think that's the reason they're not here today, because President Gutskowitz is the one president that I've seen take an interest in listening to students. When students feel heard, they don't come to this space, right? Because they have a space where they feel that they have been dignified. And taking time to listen to our students, in that space we shared mutual dignity, and I just appreciate you for that. And for all the trustees who showed up to that meeting who were able to come, I just thank you for that as well. And I want to repeat what I said to them, which is that we are extremely proud of them, of their leadership, of their tenacity, of their grace, of their passion. But they came organized too. Handouts, scripts, they were on it, all business. And we are fortunate at MSU to have them at our institution. It is our pleasure to serve them. And I want to make sure that I recognize the work of Dr. Lee June, Murray Edwards, and Jason Worley, who work with those students closely and give a lot of guidance. Finally, it's been said a couple of times today, DEI has, every time I say DEI, I just want to sigh, right? Like, it's just a lot going on right now in the world. I want to just say what I've been saying for the last 2 weeks. Diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, we face unscrupulous scrutiny and attack, but we, leaders of a land-grant institution, must stand firm. We must stand firm in our commitment to ensuring that every student, educator, and leader, because of their diverse backgrounds, not regardless or in spite of, because of their lived experiences, has access to opportunity, representation, and belonging. DEI is not about division. It's about expanding access, enriching education, lifting voices that have historically and contemporarily been excluded. It's about ensuring that excellence is cultivated through the inclusion of everyone in the space. Limitations, exclusions, discrimination breed mediocrity and below basic behavior. Not basic, below basic. Michigan State has long been a place where knowledge meets transformation. We will not waver in our responsibility to create spaces where all students, especially those from marginalized backgrounds, can thrive, lead, and leave lasting positive change. Knowing history is critical. If you recognize our collective strength, if you recognize Black history is American history, is world history, you'll recognize the power that you have for perseverance, the strength in community, the undeniable truth that when we lift our voices, we move the table. Shake it up. In this moment, look to history, our collective history. Look at Black history. These are uncertain times, yet we persist. We have lived with ambiguity, lived under duress, survived threats, made ways out of no way. This is no different. In the throaty vibrato of Fred Hammond, this ain't nothing. We got this. Lisa Fraze showed us last week. Steady leadership. Let's prepare for the worst and expect the best. We had an executive order on a Monday. Friday, where was it? Remain calm. Remain committed. We got this. MSU is powerful. Coalesced with other universities with the same values, ideologies, and the commitment to education as the most potent pathway to liberation, MSU can be a force. Don't underestimate the power of education and its institutions. We don't have to look outside. We look inside. We got it. This month and every month, we're not going to let anybody turn us around. We reaffirm our commitment to justice, equity, and the pursuit of a future where every student can achieve their fullest potential. The fight for inclusion is a fight for excellence, and that is a fight worth having. Go green, I forgot. Oh, go green.
Thank you, Trustee Vassa. Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
Thank you. I have no comments other than to just extend a warm welcome to our newest colleagues. So Rebecca and Mike, it's wonderful to have you at the table. And I also just want to thank everyone who has already come to our table to speak with us this morning, almost this afternoon, and to thank in advance those that we'll be hearing from in public comment. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you, Trustee Kanaki Jefferson. That will move us on to public participation on items not germane to the agenda. So items and individual presentations that are not germane to action items on the board's agenda are limited to 3 minutes. There will be a warning beep at around 30 seconds, and your time will end when the buzzer sounds. Individuals may not yield all or part of their time to other individuals. And first, we'll hear from Anthony Barash, followed by Ben LaCrosse. Anthony, are you with us? Okay, we'll move on to Ben LaCrosse. Ben, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, President Guskowitz. Good morning, Board of Trustees. I'm Ben LaCrosse. I'm a fruit farmer from Leelanau County, and I'm the new president of Michigan Farm Bureau. This past Tuesday, Michigan Farm Bureau celebrated its 106th birthday. That means 106 years ago, a group of farmers got together on this campus to organize because they knew together they could engineer a bright future for agriculture in the state of Michigan. Our first executive vice president, Clark Brody, is the namesake of the Brody Complex. Our organization and Michigan State University have a long, long history together. So I'm proud to stand here before you today, representing all of Michigan's farmers, from fruit farmers to bean farmers, urban farmers to dairy farmers, to reinforce the commitment that we have to Michigan State University. My leadership path in life started in 4-H, showing animals at the fair and doing things through extension programs in my community. The success of my farm and for farms around the state of Michigan is a direct result of the work that's done at the College of Ag and Natural Resources and at the Ag Bio Research Farms throughout the state of Michigan. Your campus programs provide a bright future for thousands of students who gain career training through your educational programs. My son is a senior in high school. He's been accepted, and he's looking forward to studying mechanical engineering here on campus next year. That makes me very proud as a father. So 106 years ago, a group of farmers believed in this university. They believed in the future of agriculture. I stand before you today with that same belief. Thank you, Trustee Scott, for attending the Ag Town Hall in Fremont last month. I'd be happy to attend anything, any farm visits that any other Board of Trustees or you, President Guskowitz, would like to do. Thank you for what you do, and I look forward to working with you to bring a bright future for agriculture and the university to fruition. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ben. Our next speaker is Tom Munley, who is appearing via Zoom, I believe, and then Grace Caviston. So, Tom, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Tom, please proceed with your remarks.
Thank you very much. Well, Board, I'm back again, this time to happily celebrate some good news. And first, I want to start by congratulating Trustee Mike Balow. I know that several of you have gotten used to seeing Mike on this side of the podium, but I just wanted to highlight a couple things that are very important. Mike is not a single issue trustee. I know that. I'm sure he's probably told you all that, but I will just tell you, over the last 4.5 years of getting to know Mike while we've worked to advocate for swimming and diving's reinstatement, Mike's concern, intention, and frankly, desire to see Michigan State be the best possible university it can be has been evident in every conversation I've had with him, and I'm just very pleased to see him sitting up on the board. So, Mike, congratulations. Great to see you up there. Second, I also wanted to acknowledge the fact that while President Guskowitz has been very willing to meet with us and have conversations, and his comments to the state news a while ago seemed to indicate that there was no chance. We understand there's a little more nuance to that, and I want to make sure that we highlighted the fact that while we acknowledge that there is some uncertainty with the Grant House suit that is still pending in terms of what the obligations for the university may be in terms of certain payouts, we did want to call out the fact that in the most recent FRS, there was $20 million of additional money being spent on administrative expenses within the athletic department. So when we talk about money being an issue, we're pretty confident that if we had to pinch some pennies, there are certainly some administrative expenses that could be converted into opportunities for some of the 10,000 swimmers and high school swimmers and divers in Michigan to have the opportunity to come swim at Michigan State. And finally, last, regarding the pool that is currently being built, our understanding is that we're reaching a critical point, and the plans that have been submitted thus far, while will certainly create a very beautiful facility for those on campus, might stop short of actually creating a wonderful competition facility that could be used not only for a potential varsity and swim and dive reinstatement, but also for those same 10,000 high school swimmers and divers who look for great facilities to have their high school state championships. So my last piece of advocacy today is to encourage you and to encourage Vinnie Gores and the team working on the pool to not stop, you know, an inch short when the seating that could be built for that facility at this point in time can easily adequate, you know, championship meets with just a little extra push, and to stop short and to do it where you only have seating for 750, that will hamstring you, that will restrict what that use can be, and really will limit the opportunities to get, you know, thousands upon thousands of young high school swimmers and divers, water polo players, synchronized swimmers, and other people from the community in to take advantage of a great facility. So add the seating, make sure you do it right. Michigan State has a long history of sometimes being short-sighted in certain things. This is an opportunity to make sure that you're not short-sighted and take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of you to build a truly wonderful facility for both competitors as well as people on campus alike. Thank you very much, and go green.
Thanks, Tom. Our next speaker is Grace Caviston, followed by Wasim El Reyes. Grace. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Grace Caviston, and I'm here to discuss the hopeful return of the Michigan State Swim and Dive Program. But first, a little background about me. I'm a 15-year-old freshman from LaPorte, Indiana. I am an honors AP student, musician, and free sport athlete. I've shown draft horses in 4-H for 7 years, and this year I'm on the varsity soccer, track, and swim team. I'm currently working on graduating with a biomedical degree, aiming to become a surgeon. My parents met here and are now alumni. My dad just asks that you not look up his transcripts, but my mom should be okay.
I love it.
To continue, I've wanted to go here for a long time. And my first football game was the 2012 season opener against Boise State. This is when I was 2. I've had the fight song memorized since I was 3. At the age of 4, I started shouting "Go Green" to anyone wearing MSU apparel. And I've even danced with Sparty at the 2015 Final Four in Indianapolis when I was 5. Overall, I've grown up loving Michigan State, and I hope it will become a big part of my future. Now let me tell you about how I came to speak here today. This last summer, my family and I were at the Olympic swim trials in Indianapolis, and I saw someone wearing a Michigan State shirt. So I shout from across the entire Lucas Oil Concourse, "Go Green." When he didn't hear me, I walked right up next to him and I said it again. And that's when I met Mr. Thurston, another speaker here today. He responded with "Go Light, Go White," which we're supposed to do. And we started talking about MSU and my swim career. I tell him that it is always in my dream to swim at Michigan State, and then he pulls out his phone and asks if he can have a recording of me saying that. So I'm here today to tell you that there are people interested in becoming swimmers here. So I will say to you what I said to him. It is my dream to swim for Michigan State, and I'm very excited and optimistic about the future of this program. Thank you for your time, and I will see you in the fall of 2028. Go Green.
Go White. Thank you, Grace. Our next speaker is Wasim El Reyes, followed by Jennifer Gett. Wasim, good morning.
Good morning. I want first to acknowledge the 3 trustees who stayed to talk to our students and in so doing help salvage this meeting. Now to my public comments. In February 2024, 25-year-old Aaron Bushnell engaged in an extreme act of protest outside the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. Minutes before and as he walked toward the embassy gates, he started a live stream on his phone announcing, quote, "I am an active duty member of the United States Air Force, and I will no longer be complicit in genocide. I am about to engage in an extreme act of protest, but compared to what people have been experiencing in Palestine at the hands of their colonizers, it is not extreme at all. This is what our ruling class has decided will be normal," unquote. A year later, our new president, just like our former president, has done what Bushnell warned against: normalize, condone, and enable a genocide. The genocide of the Palestinian people appears to be a bipartisan affair. Sitting next to a man charged with war crimes by the International Criminal Court, President Trump matter-of-factly admitted that Gaza is no longer fit for human life. Casually, he suggested that the U.S. should ethnically cleanse 2 million Palestinians and turn my people's homeland into, quote, the Riviera of the Middle East, unquote. He spoke of Gaza's annihilation as if it was, as if he was describing a natural disaster and not a 15-month genocide paid for by our tax dollars, aided and abetted by our government, and supplied by the weapons manufacturers, industries of death that Michigan State University defends as legitimate avenues to enrichment for a public university such as ours. Trump's normalization of genocide is the public face of Biden's policy, what he pursued and attempted to hide from the American public for so long. Palestinian-American professor Noor Arikat writes, quote, "And should we be surprised that after such gruesome crimes have been committed in our name, fascism has found fertile ground here at home. For 15 months, Palestinians and their allies protested relentlessly and at times heroically, not only to stop a genocide, but to salvage and preserve core humanitarian principles governing life within the United States," unquote. Now we must confront the new administration, insisting that this is not who we are, if that's even possible after changing the subject and averting our eyes for so long. And now you, our trustees, have abdicated any pretense to ethical investment, even at the cost of normalizing a genocide. Is this who we are? Thank you.
Thank you, Wasim. Our next speaker is Jennifer Gett, followed by Alex Allweis. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Gett. Most of you know me by now. For the new board members, I'm faculty at James Madison College. On Wednesday morning, MSU faculty and staff for Palestinian rights released our report, The Cost of Complicity, A Call for Ethical Investment at Michigan State University. Each of you received a copy of the report via email. I urge you to read it carefully. It represents months of research by a dedicated team of MSU faculty. It also includes 8 demands directed at the Board of Trustees and the administration. The faculty speakers who will follow me today will detail those demands for you. My comments are going to focus on the recent revision of BOT 607 investment policy, which relieves the board of its fiduciary responsibility to, quote, exhibit social conscience in the administration of the university's investments. Apparently, the board found the concept social conscience to be too subjective. And it's true, the values we embrace as a community aren't always singular or unified. When it comes to human rights, however, we have international law, which represents settled jurisprudence. Our report outlines a consensus amongst international courts, institutions, and human rights groups that the Israeli state is committing the crimes of apartheid, illegal occupation, and genocide. Also established fact, the U.S. government aids and abets Israel's flagrant breach of international law. Another fact, evidenced in our report, MSU profits from Israel's war crimes via its considerable investments in weapons manufacturers. All facts, court rulings in some cases, established by experts charged with making such determinations. Many of us note the BOT 607 revision shifts power away from our democratically elected trustees to the administration, and in some cases, the chief investment officer, a former head fund manager. MSU's CIO now has the authority to invest in any vehicle not restricted by law, abandoning all pretense to ethical decision-making. BO6 now only allows the board to consider divestment with the recommendation of a committee appointed by the president. These new procedures grant the president the power to unilaterally veto committee recommendations for divestment before they even reach the board. To our trustees, why are you relieving yourselves of your official responsibilities as elected representatives of the people of Michigan? Why are you participating in the downsizing of our democracy, especially at a time when our democracy is so imperiled? Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer. Our next speaker is Alex Allweis, followed by Stephen Gasteyer. Alex, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Alex Ulweis, and I'm faculty in the College of Education. Dr. Guskowitz came and observed and spoke to my class during the listening tour. I wish he was here to hear my words. Little disappointed that he walked out just now. I'm going to present our first demand as faculty, which is that the university divest from all direct and indirect financial investments in the state of Israel, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, weapons manufacturers, heavy machinery companies, IT software and AI and surveillance companies, oil and gas companies, and water companies with known and documented poor human rights records and complicity in war crimes and crimes against humanity. We thank you for sharing the recent June 30th, 2024 cash and investments disclosure report recently. We have updated our numbers, and we have now identified at least $872 million, or 15.5% of the university's cash and investments that should be targets for divestment. Our report outlines various ways these investments support and profit from systematic violence, large-scale destruction, apartheid, genocide, and other crimes against humanity. Given the violations of human rights and international law documented in our report and the expansiveness of the harm to the Palestinian people, MSU's investment strategy is not moral, ethical, or sustainable, and makes us complicit in unimaginable violence and destruction and genocide. We call on MSU's Board of Trustees to recognize the moral and ethical imperative to divest. The university has a stated commitment to the highest ethical and academic standards, as well as, quote, transparent decision-making and accountable governance. These stand in stark contradiction with its focus on maximizing investment returns over other educational, ethical, and social considerations. These demands take on an added urgency with the growing assault on First Amendment rights and on U.S. campuses, exemplified by the recent presidential executive order to monitor and report university students and employees who engage in Palestine solidarity activism with the aim of potentially deporting those who are not U.S. citizens. As a Jewish member of this community, I continue to be deeply concerned about how false definitions of anti-Semitism have been weaponized to undermine accountability and care for those directly impacted by genocide. Divestment from all companies complicit in upholding violence and apartheid against Palestinians would place MSU on the right side of history and be a step towards making this campus a safer and stronger community, and serve as a small step toward accountability and justice for the Palestinian people. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Our next speaker is Stephen Gasteyer, followed by Divya Victor. Stephen, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak this morning. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Sociology, and I've spent a career working with colleagues on environmental and social justice in Palestine. You've already heard from others about the current situation and about the report a number of us have contributed to on MSU's investments. I want to highlight two points, demands two and three from that report. Demand two, at the end of the report, calls for us to develop a sustainable and ethical investment strategy that redirects investments away from militarism, genocide, human rights violations, and apartheid, and toward building opportunities for community and small business development in Michigan and beyond. Toward entities building a better world. I would like to note that this would be a positive step toward achieving platinum status on the ASHI ratings for sustainability in higher educational institutions, which is a key goal of the Michigan State University strategic plan. Our current investment strategy is one of the key deficits in terms of reaching that platinum, coveted platinum status for us. Second, demand three in the report, the process of making investment decisions should be made through a transparent process that includes voices from the groups that are calling for it for disinvestment and providing alternatives to the current and conventional investment system. There needs to be a transparent process that includes these diverse voices, students, staff, and faculty, that have been organizing on campus and in the broader community to support Palestinian rights. Thank you so much for your time and for your consideration.
Thank you so much, Stephen. Our next speaker is Divya Victor, followed by Linda Sayed. Divya, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I am Divya Victor. I am an associate professor of English and writing. I'm one of the people that Trustee Bahar Cook named in her list of people recently honored by national awards. The last time you saw me here, I was missing the ceremony to honor me as Michigan State's sole nominee for Distinguished Professor of the Year to speak on the same matter. My chief purpose is to pay attention to how much freedom we have to express ourselves and how that freedom is relative to our identities. A concern about freedom of expression is connected to what you have called civil discourse and the conditions here under which it can be practiced. Because I'm a scholar of language use during mass trauma, including the genocide we now call the Holocaust, I am paying attention to our current moment. Federal orders and policies show that we are in a new era. If we can be punished by deportation for speaking against Israel's war crimes and genocide against Palestinians, we are not free. If we can lose our livelihoods because we refuse to accept the conflation between a critique of Zionism and anti-Semitism, we are not free. These federal orders decimate civil discourse. What are you doing in your roles to actively, intentionally stand against it on our dear campus? After the Holocaust, Americans loved to wonder, how did it happen? How did the Germans let it happen? How did they let their elected government murder dissidents and intellectuals, writers and thinkers? It is because civilians did little to stop neighbor turning on neighbor, because universities turned in professors and students, because elected leaders abandoned the most vulnerable. How did they let it happen? They didn't let it. They made it happen. When institutions do little to stop the erosion of free speech, we see mass arrests of scholars, forced displacement, and the strangulation of a free press. These are measures used by authoritarian regimes. They make life unlivable. They manufacture mass death for profit. It has happened here. It can happen again. What are you doing to make sure it doesn't? You must begin by protecting freedom of speech on our campus. Our demands in the report detail this. Recognize and directly address anti-Palestinian and anti-Arab racism and the Palestinian exception to free speech here. Expand the MSU's anti-discrimination policies to account for anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab racism, and Islamophobia. Use all measures within your power to protect those without U.S. citizenship from deportation and attacks on their status when they express solidarity with Palestine or criticize the state of Israel. You must not monitor or report protected political expression and protest to authorities. You must provide legal aid and support to those who face deportation orders for standing with the oppressed.
Thank you, Divya. Next speaker is Linda Sayed, followed by James Thurston. Linda, good morning.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Linda Sayed, a faculty member at James Madison College. Like faculty before me, I will address demands 6, 7, and 8 in the report, the cost of complicity, a call for ethical investment at Michigan State. Demand number 6, we demand that MSU provide funding and resources for services to support students who express loss and hardship to the political events. For over 15 months, Palestinian, Arab, and Muslim students have expressed their anguish as they juggled academic responsibilities during a genocide with insurmountable losses. As an advisor to a registered student group, I've heard countless grievances from students about the invisibility they face at MSU as they struggle with these traumatic experiences. Most of the time, their trauma is individualized, but never acknowledged as a collective. Students must justify their suffering repeatedly to the institution to prove their humanness and obtain accommodations. The university must learn to recognize the collective trauma our students have experienced and provide impacted students with individualized academic accommodations and collective recognition. Number seven, we demand that MSU adhere to its own mission statement, quote, to serve the common good and improve the world we live in, to end quote, by establishing partnerships with Palestinian universities to support them after 50 months of scholasticide or Israel's intentional and systematic destruction of the Palestinian educational system. According to the UN, Israel has destroyed over 80% of schools in Gaza, while all 11 universities have been wholly or partly destroyed. An important part of the demand includes the provision of scholarships for Palestinian students to study at MSU. Demand number eight, we call on MSU to provide funding and resources for educational research and community initiatives and partnerships focused on the Middle East and North Africa, or the MENA region, and the Arab diaspora. MSU is the largest university serving in-state undergraduates, something we've talked about today. Michigan also has the largest concentration of Arabs in the country. MSU scholars have partnered with leading Arab institutions such as Access and the Arab American National Museum on research and events quite frequently. Consequently, MSU is attracting more Arab and Palestinian American students and has hired an increasing number of faculty to serve them. Yet MSU has no program, no center, or established initiative that focuses on the Arab world. There is an urgent need for institutional recognition of Arab and Palestinian Americans through the creation of outreach services, educational programs, and research initiatives backed by the university. The time to act is now. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Our next speaker is James Thurston, followed by Abigail Rodriguez. I think James is joining us via Zoom. James, can you hear me?
James, hear me? There we go. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, James.
Apologies for that.
Yeah, no problem at all. Go ahead. Please proceed with your comments.
Yes. So I'm an alumni who lives outside the state of Michigan. And when I go around the country, the one thing I love to do most is to intentionally wear the only colors and then hearing the inevitable go green from afar. I've been in the back country of Yosemite, on the streets of Seattle, and on the beaches of Florida. Go green. So in June, after I and others met with President Guskowitz, I went to the swimming Olympic trials in Indy, my hometown, and attended the largest Olympic trials event ever for any sport and did what I always do. I wore the only colors. What did I hear? Well, apparently, eventually, go green. So it was this simple act of wearing green and white with great pride, combined with the expansive Spartan family, that got me connected with Grace Caviston. As you heard, at the top of an escalator and unprompted, Grace expressed to me, it would be my dream to swim at MSU. So, Mr. President, I owe you an apology of sorts. I know we said we'd let you do your work, and we will. However, given Grace wanted to do this, I just had to do what I could to help facilitate this young woman coming here today to express her dreams to you and the board. And today seemed like the best time to do this. So I humbly ask for your understanding, and in particular, I ask the women of this board to hear her call. On other matters, I met Mike Balow several years ago, and he, like the rest of us, have learned way more about MSU than we ever wanted to. After he was elected, I sent him an email, my observations of MSU over the years, and with 11 different items. You know what wasn't part of that email? Swim and dive. Siloed, non-collaborative decision-making, a seemingly backwards building naming rights process, to name just a couple items. Mike has committed himself through countless miles on his own listening tour that rivals your own, President Guskowitz. What is the evidence of this work? More votes than any trustee in the last decade. Although, Ms. Behar-Cook, you are close number two. What does this mean? The people of Michigan are calling for change and improvements at MSU. Some people are called to serve more than others. Look no further than Mike's service in the Navy. Service to his fellow citizens is in Mike's DNA, and you heard that today. Mike will be tough, and he will ask hard questions, and probably already has. It comes from a place of values and caring, and that's service. never slept so soundly in the past several years than knowing that you, President Guskowitz, and I mean that sincerely, and Mike Bailo are now part of the team leading MSU forward. And I can't thank you enough, Mr. President, and the other trustees for your comments today on an inclusive community at MSU. Last fall, I saw MSU define an individual, a Spartan, as an individual who exhibits an uncommon will to make a better world, and I would add a better MSU. By that definition, Mike Bailo is without question a Spartan with Spartan's will. We look forward to continuing to collaborate with you as we go forward. Grace, sorry I couldn't be there today. Always remember what you did. I'm very proud of you. See you at the next meet in Indy. And oh, Dr. Vassar, my sister has an AOL email too. Go green.
Thank you very much, James. Our next speaker is Abigail Rodriguez, followed by Noah Martin. Abigail, good morning.
Good morning. My name is Abigail Rodriguez, and I serve as the ASMSU representative for the Residential College in the Arts and Humanities, or ARCA. I'm currently a senior and about to graduate in May. So I've been reflecting on my time in ARCA these past 4 years and on my experiences and what I have learned through ARCA's unique curriculum. One thing that I've been thinking about recently is what it means to be consultative. In ARCA, we learn and practice the idea that in any community we engage with, we are not the experts. In fact, the members of the community that we work with are the knowledge holders, the experts of their community, and the only one who can truly understand their community's needs. We learn that we cannot enter these spaces with predetermined solutions without first engaging in meaningful consultation. Yet, despite this fundamental principle, one that guides the very mission of ARCA, this consultative approach has failed to be applied to the proposed ARCA-Cal merger. The decision to consider a merger was made without adequate engagement with ARCA students, faculty, staff, and was not one that came from anyone in ARCA. The merger committee has met and has been given an April deadline to explore possible administrative structures. However, the committee's narrow charge to examine only the pros and cons of merging ARCA into Cal suggests that the merger is a predetermined conclusion rather than one option among many. This contradicts the faculty's December 24 letter to the board, in which they called for a truly consultative process, one that considers alternative administrative structures outside of a merger to support the arts and humanities at MSU without dismantling ARCA's unique identity. This university claims to value shared governance, yet the rushed nature of this process and the exclusion of key stakeholders from meaningful decision-making contradict these values. In previous meetings, I have called for transparency. I have called for a process that respects the voices of critical stakeholders. And I also practice what I preach. This entire speech was written with thorough consultation with the ARCA Council that represents the students. And today, I stand here to remind you once again, consultation is not an afterthought. It is not a formality. It is a necessary foundation for any ethical and sustainable decision regarding the future of this university. ASMSU has also made our stance clear by passing Bill 6154, which reaffirms our opposition to any merger that is not the result of a truly transparent and consultative process. Furthermore, we stand in calling for the merger committee to expand its scope and consider alternative administrative structures. So I ask you, how can you justify this process when those who have been most that will be most impacted by it will be left out? How can you claim to uphold the values of shared governance when transparency and inclusivity has been sidelined? ARCA has been a beacon of interdisciplinary scholarship, critical thinking, and community engagement and social justice at MSU. Its merger into Cal will not only weaken its autonomy, but also set a dangerous precedent for decision-making at this institution, one that ignores the voices of those who will be impacted. I urge you, as Board of Trustees, to reject any merger proposal that does not come from a transparent, consultative process. And I urge you to commit to engaging in meaningful dialogue with ARCA students, faculty, staff, alumni, community partners, and other stakeholders, not as an afterthought, but as an integral part of this decision-making process. Thank you.
Thank you, Abigail. Our last speaker is Noah Martin. Noah, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your time, and thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Noah Martin, and I'm a third-year student at MSU College of Law. First, I'd like to thank the many members of the board who have affirmed their commitment to this institution's diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. I'm here today to urge this board to uphold that commitment. As a law student, I could discuss the many ways that these attacks on DEI infringe on the First Amendment rights of MSU's faculty, staff and students. But in the interest of time, I'd like to discuss my own personal experience in benefiting from these DEI programs. I benefited from DEI for years before I even knew what DEI meant. Many people like me who attended underfunded rural public schools benefit from the many universities that offer flexible admission standards from students from rural areas. I've also received DEI scholarships for being the child of a veteran and for being a first-generation law student. But it wasn't until I started at MSU College of Law that I fully came to appreciate the importance of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Here I found friendship and community with people I never would have met if I'd stayed in my very rural, very white hometown. However, my interest in DEI goes beyond just the relationships that I've built here at MSU. Shortly before I started at MSU Law, I came out as a transgender man and made the difficult but important decision to start my transition. I quickly realized that DEI programs are more than important. They are vital to ensure that marginalized students are properly supported in their educational endeavors. MSU and MSU College of Law will always have a special place in my heart as the place where I was able to become the man I am today. That being said, my first year of law school was difficult. I had to advocate for rights I had once taken for granted, like being able to use a bathroom I felt safe in, and being able to participate in class discussion the same as any other student. Despite these difficulties, the biggest reason I'm here where I am today, under 6 months from achieving my lifelong goal of becoming an attorney, that reason was the support that I received from Dean Mary Ann Ferguson, the Dean of the Law School's Diversity and Equity Services Office. Dean Ferguson is a pillar of the law school community, whose leadership, advocacy, and compassion are invaluable to the academic success and well-being of so many students like myself. Programs like DESO and educators like Dean Ferguson are what makes this university great. I urge this board to uphold these programs. To close, I'd like to remind the board of the commitment MSU made in 1862 when it became this nation's pioneer land-grant university. MSU will forever be part of a movement that ensured that a college education would never again be limited to a privileged few. Please uphold this commitment, and please do not comply in advance with these attacks on DEI. Thank you, and go green.
Thank you, Noah. President Guskowitz, that concludes this morning's public comments.
Thank you, and I want to again thank all of you for being here today. I want to thank all of you for what you do to help move this great university forward, working together as one team, and we're going to stay committed to that. So I wish you all a wonderful weekend, and with that, I'll ask if there's a motion to adjourn. Support? All those in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? The meeting's adjourned. Thank you.